Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
I was still like a kid with all this resentment and anger and rage and self-pity, and it just owned me. And through a series of things, hard work, and people that were there for me in so many areas, so many ways, I learned how to be a survivor.
That's the voice of Joe Crowley speaking to the Boston Globe after the release of the movie Spotlight about the paper's investigation in the Catholic Church's cover-up of sex abuse by clergy. Crowley passed away on Easter Sunday at age 58. He was one of the first survivors of clergy sex abuse to come forward, and he paved the way for so many victims of abuse to speak out. Sasha Pfeiffer wrote a moving tribute in the Boston Globe today about her first meeting with Joe. She wrote that he was, quote, smart, funny, and articulate, but also nervous, insecure, and still trying to recover emotionally from what had happened to him decades earlier. Joe's brave story touched so many. One of those people was Jim Scanlon, himself a survivor of clergy sex abuse. He got to know Joe Crowley during a premiere of Spotlight, and he joins us now. Hi, Jim.
Hey, Tanya.
So tell me, how are you doing?
I'm emotionally exhausted. I got a call yesterday from Sasha Pfeiffer telling me what had happened to Joe, and it was a real punch in the gut. It was a surprise, and I was with him a few weeks ago, and he seemed to be doing pretty well.
I wanted to ask you about that. Tell me just a little bit about how you all met and you kept in touch all of these years.
Yeah. Back before the movie came out, back in October of 2015, the director and writer of Spotlight put together a private screening for some of the victims, and three of us, as a matter of fact, Phil Saviano, myself, and Joe. At that time, I was and am in the movie anonymous. There's a different name used for me, and I was very, very private about what had happened. I had never met Joe or Phil. But after the movie, we all went to dinner, and I explained my situation, and there was a connection for me, especially with Joe.
Tell us a bit about that connection. That connection really led you to really speaking about what happened to you.
Oh, he was probably the most impactful person on my decision to be public with my story. When I got to see him, everybody has handled this differently, people who are survivors. But Joe was a very positive man. He used humor to hide some of his pain. And I saw how he was handling it, and I saw how easily and comfortable he was talking about what happened, and it was a light bulb for me. Seeing the movie and seeing it all together, but then watching Joe and saying, you know, why the hell am I shameful about this? What do I have to be ashamed of? And it just turned a light bulb for me and turned a corner for me that when the Providence Journal reached out to me to do the story, I said, you know what? Joe has had a positive impact on me. I want to let other people know, other survivors know, that you don't have to stay in the shadows.
Tell me about the last time you saw him and the time that you all spent together.
Well, it's classic Joe. I'd been talking with him, and, you know, it was late March, and we had just had the snowstorm and that, and he was getting claustrophobic and hadn't been out a lot. He'd walk a lot, but he certainly didn't drive, and so I invited him to this, we were packing meals for needy kids in Rhode Island. It's an organization that I'm part of. So we were going to spend the morning. I said, hey, you want to take a ride with me to Rhode Island, to Providence, and help feed some hungry kids? And he said, sure. Joe wasn't necessarily an early riser, and I told him, we got to get out of here, get out of Boston by 7:30. But he happily did it, and we went down and spent about 4 hours doing that. We went and grabbed lunch afterwards and just spent the whole day together. Mm-hmm. That's the funniest part. It's his attitude that day kind of swung to positive again, and after kind of just being, you know, snowed in. And his health seemed better than prior times I had seen him. You know, I'd had a lunch in January with him, and he seemed to be doing good. And that's why it was such a shock when I heard he had passed.
One thing in Sasha Pfeiffer's piece today that struck me, and I'm sure so many people who read it, was about Joe's health issues and how really over time it was symbolic for the pain that he had gone through. When you read that, or when you thought about that, when you think about Joe and you think about what you've gone through and so many of the survivors, what is it that you want people to remember most specifically about Joe?
Well, I mean, even with those health issues, he battled through so many things, and she did. She spoke about him being brave. To me, he was the most resilient person I knew. He and I would go for coffee and would just talk, and the things that man went through, how he survived those years and the years where he abused alcohol and abused himself, and his health was not good, but something happened and his resilience kicked in, and he was sober 20 years. And the message to others, especially those who haven't come forward or haven't really dealt with it, is you can survive and you can live a happy, good life. And yep, his early years beat him up physically, but it didn't get to him mentally. He was a strong, positive person.
There was one thing that Joe said in a documentary a few years ago. He said, "What I learned is that every voice counts, and one of them is mine." And you spoke to that just now about how it was Joe that really made you feel that your voice was important, and really to be come out of the shadows to let people know your name. Talk about why it's so important that people not only share their stories but share their names and really take that step of bravery.
Because it, one by one, it helps everyone. And I know I went from feeling shame and trying to forgive myself to feeling proud that I could survive, and proud that I am enjoying a very good life. And that day Joe and I spent together, I'm glad I told him this, but I was just telling him because I meant it, but because he helped me to come forward. It's probably close to 70 people after my story got out there in the paper. A number of people who were close friends, business acquaintances, people I didn't know have reached out to me, and they're starting to tell this story that they're getting help. One neighbor who was a woman who had been abused by a step-parent hadn't told her husband or her family, and she's getting help. She's told her husband and just feeling great about, or better about, who she is. She's working hard at it. And that's Joe's legacy. That's one by one. And because she's sharing it, someone else will come forward to her and get the help they need and turn things around or make things better. And I'm glad I told him.
I'm glad you told him too. Thank you so much for talking with us. And our hearts go out to you and all of those who knew and loved Joe Crowley. That's Jim Scanlon, a friend of Joe Crowley and a survivor of clergy sex abuse. Jim, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks, Tanya. It's an honor to speak on Joe's behalf.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Tanya Mosley. This is Radio Boston.